Are you a sports fan that's tired of the same old sports talk that you hear on sports podcasts and television shows on those sports networks every day? Are you secretly a fan of sports books but have never had anyone to discuss them with because they're not considered highbrow or literary enough? Or are you just interested in diving deeper into the world of sports? Well, I have the podcast for you. Each month, join me and my co-host Dave Bryant on the Sports Literati podcast, where we break down a sports book in detail. We explore the issues that go on behind the game, and we try to figure out which are the sports books that are worth reading and which ones are the ones that belong in a dumpster. And most importantly, which ones belong in the pantheon of sports books. This month, Dave and I are talking about Andre Agassi's seminal tennis book, Open. Check it out on the Sports Literati podcast because we're lit for sports lit.
I remember we had track and field at school, right? And the thing with track and field in Ottawa was you would do a track and field day there with your whole school, compete against the other classes in your school. And then if you won a high enough level or sort of say came in first place for whatever competition, then you get to go to this inter-school track and field day. And at my school, whenever we went to the inter-school track and field day, we would get destroyed. Our school was clobbered. Clearly at these other schools, they had a track and field program that outside of class, these kids were training, learning how to learn technique for high jump, stuff like that. Whereas at my small school, we had some mats for practicing your high jump, but we did not have many more resources beyond that. Welcome to the Medical Dads Podcast, a parenting podcast by two dads who happen to be medical doctors. I'm one of your co-hosts, Dr. Stuart Harmon, a pediatric emergency room physician and father of four from Ottawa, Ontario.
I want to be in the podcast.
Daddy, do you know what you're doing?
Can I play a game on your computer?
Daddy, where's Mommy?
And I'm your other co-host, Dr. David Hsu, a family doctor from Toronto, Ontario. Welcome aboard. All right, Dr. Harmon, we're back for another episode of Medical Dads. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, all things considered.
All right. So since we're still in sort of the back to school and education, I thought this would be a good week for us to talk about this whole process of like picking schools and what parents have to do to choose the appropriate school for their child. Seems like a thing that all parents wrestle with in some way, shape, or form at some point during their children's education.
And to different degrees, I realize. In preparation for this, I talked to a few different friends about how much thought they put into choosing the kid's school. And there's quite a range from people who just say, well, I just put them in the school that was the one for our catchment area, to people who go to the very other end of that spectrum, willing to move to a different neighborhood, willing to send the kids to like the private school that they've researched extensively. Mm-hmm. So, and then there's lots of stuff in between.
Well, that latter category, like people who are doing the extensive research and picking their house based on, you know, the reputation of the nearby school, that is really common. Like it's common enough that it significantly affects real estate prices, right? This is a thing that if you're a real estate agent, you should know how good the schools are in the areas when you take your clients around to show them homes.
Does that affect property taxes then? If I sabotage my kid's school, can I pay less in property tax?
Well, if your kids aren't great students and you purposely enroll them at the local school just to bring down your local property tax value, that could be a thing. You got four kids. You could really bring down the average that way.
They're all pretty decent students, but if it can save me some money, I'm sure I could turn them into bad students.
Yes, much easier to turn them into bad students than to go the other way, which is the problem.
It's like they've all got a Chromebook thanks to COVID. And yeah, that Chromebook is a much more useful tool for destroying education than it is for building education if you use it properly.
So I was thinking about this episode and thinking about my own experience with schooling. Like initially I was thought, you know, we would talk a little bit about private schools versus public schools. And there's certainly that is part of the conversation, but there's so much that goes into picking your child's school that, you know, I think this is going to be an interesting conversation.
Absolutely. So what's your personal experience then?
So my personal experience, my big school change that happened in my life was back in grade, I think I've talked about it on the show briefly. It was in grade two going into grade three that year. Like, yeah. I was enrolled at a local Catholic school, right? So for our American listeners in Canada, we have this thing where the Catholic school system is a public school system. Like, it's publicly funded, right?
Yeah.
And
somehow.
So we have these two school boards that exist in parallel in most of Canada, right? So if you choose to do Catholic schooling, you enter this one stream of schools. It has its own set of elementary schools, high schools, middle schools. Actually, a lot of times they don't have middle schools. The elementary school goes all the way from 1 to 8, right? Or from kindergarten to 8. And so I was in the Catholic school system. And the reason I was picked to go into that system was not because my family was especially Catholic or anything, right? But at some point, the teachers had told my family, my parents, that, you know, your son's a pretty good student. You should definitely go to Catholic school. Catholic schools are better. This was the reputation that they had back in 1982-ish, right?
Who was giving this advice to your parents?
My preschool teachers. Like, I had...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this was a thing that, like, people in the know would be telling people at that time, right? Certainly that advice is not being given by people in the know these days, as far as I know, right? And so I went to Catholic school, and first couple of years I went to a school nearby called St. Sylvester. It was all right, typical Catholic school. It had been around for a few years. In grade 2, we had this weird thing where, like, my mom and my sister moved away. And so for a year I was living just with my dad in Canada.
Yeah.
And the reason was because my sister was having a lot of problems with allergies. A lot of eczema. I don't know if she had developed asthma yet at that point, but with the allergies and the skin issues, it was hard for my mom to look after on her own. And my parents were thinking, maybe if she goes back to Asia where the climate's a little bit more humid, her skin will be better, right?
Okay.
I mean, these are all, you know, I can see you as the pediatrician thinking this is just nuts, right? But that's what they did. So I went back for a while. Like, for part of senior kindergarten, I was back in Taiwan. But yeah. Grade 1, grade 2-ish, I ended up coming back, but my mom and my sister stayed overseas. So now it's just the two dudes at home, like me and my dad, right? Which was in hindsight, you know, it was fine. Like, you know, good bonding time with dad. My dad did a lot of home renovations during that time period and kept shuttling me off to this school. But at some point, I got really sick of school, and I don't even know why. Like, you know, you ask me to this day why I flipped out about school. I don't even know. But there was a day, like, I was getting ready to get on the bus because I used to have to get on the bus in front of my babysitter's house.
Yeah.
And I just started bawling. I didn't want to go to school, right? Very upset, crying, and probably couldn't put a finger on it. This is in grade 2, right? I get called into I eventually show up at school. I get called into the office, you know, to explain why I don't want to go. And I don't even know why I don't want to go, right? There's no real reason. Probably it's just because, you know, maybe my mom's not around or something. Like, who knows, right?
You sure there isn't a reason that someone else could put a finger on? There's not a reason that has something to do with someone putting a finger on you in your Catholic school?
There's no obvious reason, all right? It wasn't one of those type of Catholic schools, as far as I know, right? But what ended up happening was I ended up saying, yeah, I don't really like the teacher or something to that effect, right? Mrs. Yeah. Mascarina, I think was her name, right? And I didn't really dislike her or anything. I think I was just trying to find an answer to get me out of talking to the principal.
Right? Well, you threw the teacher under the bus is what you did.
Well, got to throw somebody under the bus, right?
Yeah.
So then, lo and behold, you know, I go through grade 2, right? And I'm doing well in school, right? No problems. At the end of grade 2, I think my parents come back. So now we're starting grade 3. I show up for school on the first day of grade 3, and they posted these lists of, like, where each kid is in the school. And I had my buddies, which I've alluded to in like a prior episode, the Chinese chopsticks, right? Except now all three of the other Chinese chopsticks have moved on to grade 3, right? Except for me, I'm in grade 2-3, right?
Okay.
So I've ended up in the split class in 2-3 with Mrs. Mascarina's again, right? And you know, like, I know we've alluded to this, like, you know, Chinese family, you're only in the school system because supposedly you're supposed to be a top student, right?
Right.
And now you're being held back. You're going to be learning grade 2 material again, right? My parents flipped out, right? And it made no sense to them because all my buddies are in grade 3. And from what I can remember, it was a bunch of the other weaker students that were in the grade 3 part of the 2-3, right?
So were you actually supposed to be in grade three at this point?
Yeah.
Or did they have you in grade two in this 2-3 split class?
No. I'm in the three of the 2-3, but you know, okay. you know that that's not really being in three. You're 2/3 of three kind of thing, right? So my parents flip out like any good Asian parents, right? Like they complain to the school, and within a week or two, they're like, "You're switching schools," and I was upset, right? you can't take a chopstick out of the Chinese chopsticks and have them not be upset, right? Like that's just not the way it works, right? And so, by some chance,
a single chopstick cannot pick up anything.
No doubt. So then by a couple weeks from at that point, a couple weeks into the school year, my mom notices, hears from her neighbor that there's a new school, a new Catholic school has opened a few blocks away. We're also in that catchment area, and it had only been around for a couple years, but actually was a short walk for us, like much closer than the original school that I'd gone to. So she made me switch over. I was really upset, right? Like all your friends are gone. And I do distinctly remember in grade three that you're old enough to really appreciate that if your friends are gone, you're screwed, right? I remember many days like standing in the playground waiting for something to happen, right? Like, am I going to get to play foot hockey with somebody, or is it just another recess standing around? Apparently my dad said in later, he actually came to the school just to see how I was doing during recess, unbeknownst to me.
Really?
Right?
Like hiding in the bushes?
Just standing around, I think. It took me probably a year or two to really start to feel like I fit in more, right? So these transitions are not that easy for kids, right?
No,
and that's my story of how I ended up in this other school. So because of this, I've been very, very leery of like switching schools. Like every time the issue of it potentially comes up, my initial reaction is always inertia. Let's just keep things the way they are, because I remember how painful that was for me personally.
They do, you know, they make lists of things that are stressors for people in their lives. Mm-hmm. So in adults, you'll read a new job, a new move, a death in the family, a divorce. For kids on that list, switching schools is a stressor. You know, it's up there.
Makes sense. I mean, in our limited worldview at that moment, it's a huge change. Right?
Absolutely. It's funny, though, that your parents had such a reaction to you being in the split class. Because conceptually, I don't think that the way the schools usually look at it is that the split class is for the dumber kids. In fact, when I was in grade five going into grade six, there was two grade six classes you could go into, a split five grade six class and then a straight grade six class. Mm. And the teacher for the grade six class was going to be the same person I had for grade five. Mm-hmm. And one of my good friends was going into the 5-6 class. So I was wishing I was going into the 5-6 class. But I'd already been assigned to the straight six. And when I was sort of complaining to my mother, surprisingly, she was actually willing to intervene, but not because of my friend being in the other class, but the teacher that I had for grade five, she didn't really like that teacher very much. Mm-hmm. Not that she disliked the guy personally, but she just didn't really feel that he pushed the students that much. She felt like I was just sliding by in that class and getting away with a lot. Whereas the teacher who was teaching the 5-6 class had previously taught my younger brother in one of his classes, and my mom thought that teacher was great.
Right.
So she called the school to ask about switching me the class. And what the school actually told her was, yeah, you know, when we make these split classes and these classes, one of the decisions that we're looking at when we're putting the kids in the class is this a kid who can work more independently? Because if you're going to be when the teacher has a 5-6 class, she can't really, it's hard to manage that class if you've got a bunch of the sort of troublemakers or kids who just can't function well independently and need a lot of attention. Mm. So the school actually said to her, you know, yeah, we deem that your son actually is probably someone who can work fairly independently, so we don't mind switching him into that class. And actually, when I was in that class, it did sort of seem like, yeah, when I look at the other kids who made it into the class, a lot of them are the ones who would have been the better students. And in the end, I think the teachers might have regretted letting me into that class, or at least the teacher of that class, I think, was like, wait a minute, they sold me as a guy who...
So your mom intervened to put you into a split class, basically.
Yeah, she got me into the split class.
Wow.
As opposed to switching me to another school to get me out of the split
class. Now, we're not saying that all split classes are bad. By the Chinese-Canadian law of logic, split classes are only bad if you're going down a grade. But if you're going promotion-wise, like if you were going a 6-7, now you're playing with the big boys, right? You get to learn grade 7 twice. That's where you should be.
You would think so. But yeah, for my case, I was the grade six in the 5-6 class. So I was the higher grade mixed with the younger grade.
Right.
And I got to say, grade six was one of my favorite years of school ever.
I don't know. You even to this day, you'd be hard pressed to have that conversation with my mom and come out alive. I've tried, believe me.
Oh, man. Well, one of my kids has been in a split class a few times, mm-hmm. and we did not really, similar to actually what my mother's experience was, for one of her years, the teacher that she had, we didn't make a fuss about it at the time, but we noticed that that teacher was not doing a great job mm-hmm. In terms of pushing the students, being thorough with the students, that type of thing. It was a lot of like, well, your kid seems to function fine, so I'm just going to leave them alone and let them just function on their own. And so in that particular case, the next year, my kid was going to have that teacher again for the second time in a split class. Mm-hmm. And we were like, oh, man, like we don't like that. And when we talked to other people, there were lots of people who wanted to switch their kids out of that class because of the teacher. Mm-hmm. They were like, you know, if everybody's calling the school board saying we want a different teacher, they're not going to accommodate us all. But then someone to point out to us that the school actually has a policy, or the school board has a policy, about how many times in a row you can be in a split class. And they're not actually supposed to put kids in split class 2 years in a row. So we actually called the school about that, and they said something along those lines. They're like, oh, you know what? That's true. We're not supposed to do that. So we need to make it clear that it's for that reason that we will put your child in a different class this year. Please do not tell other parents that we switched your kid out of class
because
you didn't like
the teacher.
But now
we are broadcasting this out, that there is a rule about split classes.
That's right. That's right. If your kid's in a split class 3 times in a row, that's a problem.
I mean, I can't imagine that it would be an optimal situation for a teacher to be teaching in a split class. Like, I'm not an elementary school teacher, right? But it just seems to me that with young children, because they all develop at such different rates for different things, right? They develop differently socially, they develop differently physically, they develop differently for math and language, that, yeah. You know, even within people of a 365-day birthday range, there's such a variation right. in their skills. Now we're going to introduce, like, double that to, like, 750 days or whatever it is in over 2 years. You're going to end up with, like, even more variation. It must be more of a headache for the teacher, right, at that point. Right. Or you make the argument that, sure, some kids are independent enough to survive in a split class. But that's almost like saying in another way that we're telling you straight up that your child is not going to get that much attention. They don't need it, which is good, but we don't have the resources to give them that attention. Right. And you know, everyone wants their child to get attention from the teacher. Right. And no one wants their child to be in a class with 65 students. Right. So I don't know, like this argument does not work for me. I have to be on my mom's side here.
I don't know. It depends really a lot on the makeup of the class, but would you not rather have your kid in a class with the elite kids in their grade versus in a class with, you know, the troublemakers and the distractors? The idea that when your kid is is the younger of the two grades, right? If you're in the lower of the split class, yeah, I could see how parents would be thinking, this is great, because what they're going to absorb from those older kids is all their extra knowledge and all their great work habits. But that's total baloney. You know what kids absorb from other kids is all the worst traits that you don't want them to get. So that's right. Another reason why you don't necessarily want the younger kid with the older kids.
And if you're in the lower end of the split class, like the 6-7, right? And then those 7s could be the weaker ones of the from the grade above. So there's a lot of worse traits to go around.
Well, it's unlikely, I guess, from if what the school is saying is true, it's unlikely that they're going to be putting the worst students in the higher grade of your split class. But they're still putting in people who are older and in a different frame of mind, right? Especially if you take a look at, you know, grade 1-2 is a bit different than looking at grade 5-6, right? Grade 5-6, mm-hmm. you got some people in grade 6 who are still like a young grade 6. They're physically not that developed. They're still more interested in Pokemon than they are in boys or whatever else, right? And then you got people in grade 6 who are at the other end of that spectrum. So if your kid is one of the ones who is less precocious, then probably better them to have them around grade 5 kids than to have them around grade 6 kids who are more interested in, you know, the things that I was interested in grade 6 than others.
That's just assuming that as a parent, you believe that there's more to education than just straight up academics, right? That like your social standing or your interests actually matter. Like we're really, as Chinese Canadian families, talking just about which math problems are being handed out to the kids. I want to do the grade 7 math problems.
Yeah, if you really think that your kid goes to school and functions completely independently of everybody around them, then that definitely changes the way you make a lot of the decisions that I think we're going to talk about this episode about choosing a school.
So let's talk about some of these things that parents fret about, right? When it comes to picking a school, and let's see if these are things that we fret about or what we think about them. How about we do it that way?
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of them we've touched on is this whole business of like teacher to student ratio. You hear about this all the time. I was talking to a parent the other day in the clinic, and they're like, well, what's the parent teacher student ratio at your school, right? Like, and my kids go to a school where the ratio I think is like 25-1, right, which is not bad. But you hear schools where the number goes up to 30-1 in the public system, or 30+, which is usually numbers that are bandied on the campaign trail when the election comes around. And then you'll hear private schools, you know, 20-1, 15-1, right? So I believe it does matter. Like the more individualized attention you can get for a child, the better, right? And that's often what people are willing to pay for. This would be a big criteria by my book, right? But I don't know. What do you think?
It's just a bit, if you're talking about choosing a private school, then yeah, I think that's probably a huge motivator for people to choose to say, I'm taking it out of the public school system. I'm going to a private school. But unless you're making that type of a switch, it's hard to control the class size. You know, the teachers can't usually reliably tell you next year what the class size is going to be at a given school.
Right.
So one might sort of make strategies of saying, okay, well, I'm going to go to a place that's more rural and more remote, where the school is further out. And then, the class sizes will be smaller because the population there is smaller.
Right.
But then that comes with a trade-off, because if how much funding a school gets is also directly related to how what the school's population is.
Mm-hmm.
So you may go for that smaller ratio and then also find out, this school doesn't have track and field equipment or microscopes or some of the other things that you want a school to have.
Right.
But
kid's school like in ratio wise? Like you're looking at 25, 30 kids in each class?
I think it's something along those lines. I don't have a good sense this year of exactly how many kids are in the class, but I'd say that for the 4 kids, it's ranges something between, 20 to 26 kids in the class.
So that's not too bad.
That's not too bad. And then the younger grades have a mandated ratio of adult to child. So then you have teachers, but then you also have these ECEs or other sort of adults in the class who aren't strictly speaking teachers, but provide some level of supervision and interaction with the kids.
Okay, so teacher-student ratio is a thing. The next one that I had in my head was this whole split grade business, which we've talked about. Now, some schools, especially in the private system, really try to eliminate split grades, right? Like in the private system, they can kind of say, I'm going to open the class if I have just this many kids. But in the public system, where the funding can be a little bit more variable, a lot of times the split grades are not there by necessity. They're there by necessity, right? There's a bit too many kids for one teacher to handle or too few of the other class. So this is the easiest way for them to put it together.
Yeah. So I guess it's the question, how much does split grades make influence people's decision to put kids in a school?
A lot. A great deal.
Yeah, apparently. I would not have thought so before now, but hearing your story, I've never known anybody else to full on switch schools because of the split grades.
Well, it came up again with my kids. My kids were in a different private school for a couple of years before the pandemic. And one of the things is the school is very small. So a lot of these very, very small schools, they have split grades, and it just depends on how many students are enrolled each year, right? So as you kind of look down, you know, projecting forward, that could become an issue, right? So definitely my mom was not happy about the prospect of future split grades happening.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, you know, historically, schools used to be all one split grade.
Yeah, and there weren't toilets classroom. Historically. We can go all the way back to those olden days.
They had an outhouse. The kids didn't have to hold it all day.
Yes, you sit on a board with a hole cut in the middle of it.
I don't know. Back when they had wooden chairs and dunce caps, I think there was a lot of...
It is true, though. Like, this whole idea that we're going to group kids by age together is a bit of an artificial construction. If you really compare it back into the one-room schoolhouse, right, of the rural villages, like... Yeah. The idea was that people just went to school and you mixed with some kids who were a bit older and some who were a bit younger and you learn stuff, right? And the whole age thing kind of goes away as you get older too, right? Like you get into like later in high school, university, definitely post-university, like it really doesn't matter if you're 25 or you're 23 and you're doing stuff in school, right? But it's just in these early years, you know, this is the system that we've come up with. And is it the best system? Like this is open for debate.
Yeah, it's funny. I wouldn't, you know, nowadays in the public school system, all kindergarten is a split class. Mm-hmm. Did you know that,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Yeah. And that was done on purpose. That's they don't have to do that, but they choose to do that. That all kindergartens are this split 2-year curriculum. So having seen my kids go through that, I don't think it necessarily did them that much benefit, to be honest. One of the harder things too is when your kid makes friends with somebody who's in the higher like level of the split class, and then when that person leaves and goes to grade one, and now your kid is so upset because their good friend is gone and truly gone. Not just we don't see them at recess anymore, but you're not likely to interact with them at all anymore unless the parents are making a lot of effort outside of school. But I guess just at the end of the day, in terms of choosing a school for split class, I think it, you know, if all other things being equal, that's probably a nice bonus, I suppose, if you're looking at a school and it says, oh yeah, and we don't have split classes. I certainly wouldn't be advocating to say you should specifically try to get your kids into a school because they have split classes. But I don't think it actually matters as much as people think. I would certainly rather have my kid in a split class with a good teacher than in a not split class with a teacher that's mediocre.
Right.
And I think there probably is a tendency, or it would make sense for there to be a tendency, to put potentially the more capable teachers with the split classes, knowing that those ones will maybe be more effort.
So you've touched on it, because the teacher is one of these things that parents often do not consider that much when picking a school, because there's no way to know who's good or not, right? Like in some ways, it might be easier to know if your doctor is good or not, because you can go to like these websites and, you know, read doctor ratings. But teacher ratings are not really a thing, right?
And there's not a ratemyteacher.com?
There probably is. There is for Rate My Prof. I think that exists for university students. But for teachers, it's much more shrouded in mystery, like who's good and who's not. And you enroll at a school and you're only going to get that teacher for a year. And it might not even be that teacher by the time your kid enrolls in September, right? And so parents cannot plan around a teacher. And yet, I would reckon this is probably one of the biggest determining factors if your kid has a good year or not, if not the biggest. I'm going to rank it as the second biggest. The first biggest is also a thing you can't control, which is the friends that they make in that class.
That's right. Well, talking about when we were saying student ratio, and I touched on, you know, someone going to a more rural school or a smaller school, I do want to maybe bring up that idea of the smaller school, because I did have that experience when I was a kid. When I was around 7 or 8, we moved from closer to the core of Ottawa out to the suburbs. And the suburb we went to, which was Orleans at the time, was a rapidly growing area. Mm. So it was small to start with. And then over the next few years, it got bigger and bigger. So when I started, the public school that was the catchment for me was a school called Riverview Public School, which was just outside of where things were really developed. We had to take a bus to get there, and you had to drive through forest and deserted area to arrive at the school. And you could tell up until that point, that school was just populated by the few farm kids who lived out in Cumberland, the area where the school is. And now it was suddenly having all these suburban kids starting to trickle in. And so that was very much the small school experience. And there is something to be said for being a big fish in a small pond. Now, I think Malcolm Gladwell has talked about this in his books. But Being the big fish in the small pond, certainly good for your self-esteem. I remember we had track and field at school, right? And the thing with track and field in Ottawa was you would do a track and field day there with your whole school, compete against the other classes in your school. And then if you won a high enough level, or sort of say came in first place for whatever competition, then you get to go to this inter-school track and field day.
Mm.
And at my school, whenever we went to the inter-school track and field day, we would get destroyed. Our school was clobbered. Clearly at these other schools, they had a track and field program that outside of class, these kids were training, learning how to learn technique for high jump, stuff like that. Whereas at my small school, we had some mats for practicing your high jump, but we did not have many more resources beyond that. But so what I remember, though, was that you could win at your school level and feel great, right? You win that first place, second place ribbon against a few other people in your class, and you felt so good. And then going to that inter-school field day, we already knew going in, we're Riverview Public School. Nobody expects anything of us when we go to that. So that was just a day of fun. You got out of class, you got to hang around, supervision was limited. And if you did happen to win something, you were like a superhero. You bring home that third place ribbon, everybody's like, wow, you got a ribbon at the inter-school level? Amazing. All
right, this is not on our topic, but now I need to know, like, which events were you running in? Were you a sprinter? Were you in like the 100 meters? Like, you are part Jamaican, so I'm envisioning you must have been like in the 100 meter dash.
That's right. I was the young Usain Bolt. Yeah, I was the 100 meter dash, the 200 meter dash, the long jump.
What are you, Carl Lewis? You're doing every event here?
Small school, man. At a small school, the one guy who can run gets to do everything. There was like maybe four of us representing almost every event.
I mean, this does get into a question that will probably reoccur as we talk about schools, which is this whole, like, is it better to be like the big fish or the little fish, right? And it happens in athletics because it's very blatantly obvious, but it also happens in academics. It happens socially, right? Like, do you want to be the biggest kid? Like, if you're a little bit older than everyone else, you develop a little bit earlier, you have an advantage at sports, you might have an advantage academically. Like, there's some advantages to that, right? And so sometimes, like, the Chinese American or the Chinese Canadian mentality, which is like, you always want to be with kids that are ahead of you, try to catch up to them. You're forever like behind, right? You might be ahead of them in math, but they got girlfriends and you don't. That's basically the Chinese Canadian guy upbringing in a nutshell, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, how does that affect your upbringing? Because I read in the Malcolm Gladwell book that you're alluding to, which I think is, It's David versus Goliath, where he talks about how, like, if you looked at, like, pro hockey players and sorted them by their birth month, the kids that are, there's disproportionately more kids born in January, February, March, like the early months of the year compared to December. Because those kids at every level of hockey are older than everyone else around them. So they're bigger, they're faster, they get to play more probably, they develop their confidence earlier. And you always hear these stories about the guy who is really scrawny and then suddenly sprouts up at the end and becomes like a top player. But it's just not that common, right? It's much more common.
It's not the norm.
To be, to have those advantages built in just by virtue of being born at the right month of the year.
Yeah.
So I don't know. This was actually an issue that I really wrestled with as a parent, because on the one hand, I love the idea of diversity. I love the idea that, you know, we take everyone in our society and put them in a schoolhouse, right? And there are some kids that are bright and some kids that are a little slower. And we all learn from each other because we're all different, right? We learn to help each other, right? That, to me, is like is the way society should be, right? Yeah. At the same time, you know, to go through my own background, I did end up going to university in the States, right? At Cornell. So you go to one of these like Ivy League private institutions and now you're around just top students, right? And there's certain something to be said for being around top students who are all motivated. Everyone's pushing for something. Everyone is thinking about life after university. And that just, you know, the level of achievement there, right, is another level. And then I went to medical school with you, right? So we're around highly motivated people and, you know, what that's like. So then there's this idea that...
Are you sure going to medical school with me is an example of being around...
I meant you and I, you and I were surrounded by highly motivated people, right? So
yes,
so we had no choice but to tag along. And
that's right.
But yeah, so I mean, being in that environment helps, right? Because if you and I ended up in a medical school where we're the most highly motivated two guys, right? I don't know.
I'd be concerned about the entire future of medicine if we were the top of the school, if we were the creme de la creme of a medical school.
I always think about it that when I look back at our class and I see some of the guys that we were with who were highly motivated and ultimately very successful, and I'm like, I can't even imagine doing what they do, right? It just boggles my mind.
Well, you know, even when I hit undergrad, so my high school was probably similar idea of being a big fish in a smallish pond. Mm. Not that my high school was a rural high school that was remote, but it wasn't a huge high school. Anyway, when I got to university, I could tell the difference between some of the people who'd gone to private school and me. Mm. And I did at that point wonder to myself, had I been in private school, would they have like really honed the work habits I needed to thrive in this university environment? Like, would I be doing better in university if I'd gone to private school? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always wonder about that, because I could think of one of my friends from undergrad who had gone to Ashbury, which is the private school in Ottawa, or one of the private schools in Ottawa. And that guy just was so on the ball. And I couldn't even figure out how I was not on the ball. So, you know, it's not a matter of being like, oh yeah, I know I'm lazy, so that's why. I was like, I don't understand. I'm working it like as hard as I can, burning the candle at both ends and a bit in the middle. But I just don't seem to have it together like this other guy.
So, I mean, you got to tell us now, like, what happened to that guy? Is he also a pediatrician at CHEO? Like, what's he doing?
I'm not sure what specialty he went into. I want to say maybe ophthalmology. But he was a year ahead of me. He was a year ahead of us in medical school, right? This guy started undergrad with me, and he was in medical school a year before I was. You know, remember Alex Minyenko in our class?
Yeah.
This is her boyfriend.
Ah, interesting. I did not know you were close friends with the guy.
I was an undergrad, but you know, he had places to go, so I got left behind.
So this gets into this whole public versus private school thing, which is in some ways a decision that a lot of parents think about if they're fortunate enough to have the means. And it's a question that even parents that don't have the means often think about, the same way you did. Like, you're kind of looking at, like, would we be better off going to private school? And there are lots of parents making different, you know, there are lots of parents on the opposite ends of this spectrum when it comes to answering this question, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, your kids are in public school. My kids are in private school, right? So we're already on opposite ends. I mean, I don't even know where to start with this.
Well, when I talk to my own parents about school and public school versus private school, my mother is pretty frank that, you know, if we only had one kid, then we probably would have put you into private school, just as parents wanting to make sure that we didn't miss out on any advantage. But with four kids, you can't very well pick which one gets to go to private school.
And lo and behold, you happen to settle on four kids again. You're like, now I don't have That's to worry right. about this. I've washed my hands of this question. We move on.
I just seem looking at my own family experience, it would be wiser to cast a broad net than to put all my eggs in one basket.
So, I mean, I also went to public school most of my life, right? So, you know, I feel like public education in Canada is adequate, you know, for the most part. And you and I got where we needed to go. Like, you got there a year later than your buddy, right? But you eventually got there. I got there. And is it necessary to throw like $30,000 or whatever it is each year at this problem to maybe get a little bit further ahead at the end, or maybe not?
Yeah, it's interesting. I can only sort of think of the people I know in medical school who went to private school when I try to answer that question. On the one hand, without calling anybody out, some of the most just immature people, the people who just seem most like they had not spent time in the real world and were having trouble adapting to living on their own, when I think of med school, were people who tell me that they went to private school.
I know who you're thinking about right now. All right.
But I remember one girl in our class who had gone to private school saying, you know, we just talk about the whole philosophy of even should people be allowed to go to private school if now the playing field is no longer even and that type of stuff. And she's saying, you know, when she thinks about herself and is honest with herself, she says that she doesn't think she would have likely, like, socially coped well in public school, and doesn't think she likely would have done well and got into medical school had she not gone into private school. And so on the one hand, sure, maybe it's not fair that she got that advantage and end up in medical school, whereas somebody who couldn't afford to go to private school couldn't. But she's like, but if, you know, you look at it from the point of view of the parent who wants to, like, optimize everything for their kid, she's saying, like, I think that, like, for better or for worse, private school helped get me to where I am. So I was like, that's interesting food for thought. You know, before we did this episode, I had had a get together on a patio with probably the only two friends from high school that I even still
You keep
have.
Referencing so, this one two, meal that you've had. It seems like it's such a monumental event because I think you mentioned it in the last episode.
No. The last episode was the meal I had with Jess.
Oh, okay.
Who you know from med school. This meal I have two friends named Cameron and Aaron, who I often reference them on the show, but not by name. But anyway, today they get a shout out. Anyway, I had dinner with lunch with these two guys on a patio. And I was asking one of them about choosing a school because he's got one boy and he had to make a decision about, like, what school to put him in. And I was curious about what things factor into his decision and how much of a change to his life he'd be willing to make to get his kid to the school that he wants. So anyway, he has his kid in a Montessori school, which is like one of these private schools. And when I was asking about some of the things that went into the decision for it, aside from the academic aspect of it and the sort of belief that the whole Montessori style helps kids to, like, achieve more, he also was saying that just the idea of who you're going to be in the class. He's saying, you know, when you send someone to a public school, there's that concern, are they going to get bullied, picked on, people going to, you know, make it a difficult social environment. And you can't underestimate how much of a factor that can be in someone's enjoyment of school. But anyway, he was saying he just felt like at a private school, he's pretty confident that the teachers are able to moderate that or mitigate that more than at a public school. So it's interesting to hear him say that. He was talking about how he actually is thinking of moving or getting a second place to live that will be closer to the school where he wants his kid to be in.
I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like when you get into that part of the discussion, like the bullying and the social thing, I don't think that the school can control that easily, right? That's like saying that people with more money don't act like bullies, right? That's essentially what we're saying. I have trouble believing that, you know, like I can buy into the teacher-student ratio being better, less split grades, you know, percentage of kids that graduate, more resources for extracurricular activities, blah, 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 blah. But this particular aspect I struggle with, you know, like public schools are not great. Like there are a lot of examples of nasty incidents, but I don't see how being in a private school makes that any better.
I can only speculate. You know, you can only sort of guess and theorize, but I don't have enough firsthand knowledge of this to say for sure. I guess you could look and say, what are the factors that often lead to someone to be the worst kind of bully? Yeah. And you know, if there's trouble or difficulty at home, then that's often something that's going to manifest as being a bully. But is that then mean that you could say that somebody whose parents can afford to put their kids in private school are less likely to have trouble at home, or that the parents on some level bully their kid at home? Not necessarily. Mm-hmm. A lot of parents are very wealthy and, you know, they still put their kids in private school despite the fact that at home the parents fight with each other, neglect the kids.
I guess money is a source of a lot of stress for people, right? And with lower socioeconomic status come a certain set of problems, right? Like, we know that neighborhoods that are struggling in terms of socioeconomic status struggle in all sorts of parameters, including education, right? So part of it is also saying that, you know, public schools are not uniform across the board, right? There are some neighborhoods that are more difficult. Yes. There are some neighborhoods that are very challenging and some neighborhoods that are pretty posh and probably not that different from private schools, right? Yeah. So it's probably weighing some of that stuff and figuring out where you live and what the schools in your area are like and whether you're okay with that.
Yeah, I guess there's something, it's probably true that there aren't too many private schools in bad neighborhoods, these crime-ridden neighborhoods with violence. Probably they're not a lot of private schools in that
setting.
How about,
like, for me, one of the big issues with picking which school to go to was the location of the school relative to where you live. Yeah. And I think for most parents, this is a thing. Like no matter how good the school is, how far are you willing to go with your kids each day? And you have fitting that into the daily, you know, ritual of, you know, one parent has to bring them or somebody's got to bring the kids and pick them up. And like distance is an issue, right? Like I don't know about you, but when I went to high school, my high school was about an hour and 10 minutes from my house through public transit, right? Like between the walking and the waiting at the bus stop and the bus and then transferring to another bus, like it was easily that long every day, right? And you just get used to doing it. Yeah. And then when I finished high school, I was like, as an adult, I never want to do this again. It was such a waste of time, right? So for my own kids, I was like, I really want a place that's close, you know, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, that's ideal. Much further than that, it's like, you got to actually think about, you know, what's a good use of a kid's time? A child only has so many waking hours in a day, right? And you want to spend all of it stuck in traffic during rush hour? Like, not really.
Well, when we moved to our neighborhood, we live in a part of Ottawa called Findlay Creek, and it is still a developing neighborhood. So when we first came here, there was a giant empty lot, and they said to us, "Oh yes, and funding or permission has already been granted for building two schools on this giant lot, one Catholic school, one public school, and they will be built. They're projected to be built within the next year and a half." And we were thinking, well, that's amazing. So if we move here, we've got one kid who's about two at the time. We've got another kid who's a newborn. And by the time they're old enough to go to school, to real school, these pieces will be built. They'll be perfect. And this school would be walking distance from my house. So anyway, that was the bait and switch. That school did not get built until the kids were already in grade two and at the end of grade one. So what that meant for us actually was that for the first couple of years, for kindergarten, for two of the kids, they were going to a Catholic school that was the closest school to us that they still had to take a bus to get to. And then when the school was actually built, then we had to make a decision. Do we keep them in the school they're already in, or do we switch to bring them to a school that's closer? And one of the things for parents, when you're thinking about the distance to the school, if your kid is going on a bus, that actually takes out a lot of the importance of the school being walking distance. And sometimes you might actually be better off that way, because if the bus picks the kids up at a certain time in the morning, then that allows you as a parent to say, okay, then I've put them on the bus now. I've got time. I can leave and go to work. Whereas if they have to walk to school and school starts later, now you're actually in this issue where it's like, I actually have to leave for work before.
I see your point. The bus really is essentially childcare for another 30 minutes or 40 minutes.
Exactly. But in the end, I think if everything else, all things were equal, we probably would have kept them in the Catholic school at least a little while longer, because it really did seem like the school was better funded, had better resources, and it was established. We already knew them being there that we were happy enough with the school. And I did like the focus that the school put on things like being a good neighbor, being kind to other people. But then my wife teaches in the public school system. So for that reason alone, she's like, well, I can't have my kids not in public school while I'm in the
public school. Survival of the fittest is more important than being a good neighbor, ultimately.
So here they are at the local public school. As I was saying on the last podcast, they're now able to walk by themselves.
So how many years ago did they switch? They switched right at the grade one, grade two at that point when the school was built?
Let me see. My oldest daughter, if I'm remembering this correctly, my oldest daughter was going into grade two. My son was going into grade one. And my third kid started kindergarten at this school. So one of my kids started that school at the lowest grade the day the school opened. And then my fourth kid joined afterwards.
So what do you think in your mind, if you were to tell parents, are the main criteria that they should be looking at in a school? Like what should parents be looking at, like, in all seriousness?
Well, it goes back to what you said earlier. If there's any way for you to actually talk to some of the parents who already have their kids in that school to ask about, you know, which teachers who teach at this grade level were good, that you had a good experience with the kids, that would almost trump everything else. But what we didn't touch on is going to these websites that actually rank schools.
Yes.
Have you ever done that?
I've been approached by other concerned parents about ratings many times. What school do your kids go to? What's the rating of that school? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's my answer.
Yeah, I Googled it today just to see what is it about, because I heard people talk about it. And I think the Fraser Institute has a website that you can just easily search a directory, see your school and see what its rating is. And then they kind of break it down into math, reading at different grade levels,
so
how the school
scores. I have a pet peeve about school ratings. I hate them. Like, this goes all the way back to like when I was in high school and trying to figure out which universities to apply to. And I was poring over university rankings, right? Like American university rankings, Canadian university rankings, which don't really exist. Like, it's at that time, back in those days, every year you just had the McLean's Guide to Universities, right? And it seems like those rankings, a lot of those things that factor into rankings are fairly... they're just not good measurements of whether the school is a quality experience or not, you know? Like, especially for private schools, like in American universities, they're always talking about the size of the endowment, right? How much donation money they're getting from their super rich alums and stuff, right? I don't know. Like, stuff like that bothers me. I don't know how accurate that is. I've heard of the Fraser ratings. I think there is some controversy about them because the organization that funds it is not exactly the most unbiased organization when it comes to education.
Well, plus... they don't capture heart, right? They don't capture the heart factor. And I say this because I looked at my school's rating and it was, I think, a 3.9 out of 10 for the school that my kids, all four of my kids.
Out of 10? Whoa.
Out of 10. But that doesn't capture the heart.
It doesn't capture the heart. But after this episode, you can look up what school's getting 8 out of 10 in your neighborhood and figure out how to get your kids into there.
Well, the public school system is very much, you can only really go to a school if you're in the catchment area for that school. And that's where parents are willing to move, like change their location to go to a different place.
You know, in Toronto, like near where I live, it's not enough for you to buy a condominium near like the high school that you want your kids to go to. You have to own a freehold house. Like, it has to be a detached home, right? If you're in the condominium, because so many people are trying that stunt, then you have to enter a lottery to see, because there's not enough spots. Right? So more power to people who actually own real land, not a condominium.
I don't think it's a bad idea to maybe look at the rankings if you're actually in a position of having several
schools.
Now
that you have
from.
Finally looked at the rankings today and it's upended your world, let's go to what else would you look into?
Of course, I didn't really have a whole lot of choice unless I was going to pick up and move houses, which we weren't willing to do. But if you actually have like... choice, all other things being equal, then I think finding out about the teachers at the school would be one. I think it wouldn't hurt to look at the rankings just to get a sense of, you know, is my school actually somewhere where the ranking is like really terrible and I'm next to a school that the rankings are better. And then I would say maybe take a tour of the school. That would probably be the other thing. Because it's one thing to read about it, but if you could look and say, okay, I see that the facilities here look pretty reasonable. The place is not in disrepair. But I think these things I help make a decision one way or another. But nothing's going to trump talking to other people who already go to school.
That's the most useful one. Like, they can give you a feel for, like, what's the school's real mission, you know, and how are they getting close to achieving it? Are they having any major problems? There is something to be said for talking to like the principal and the staff, like at these open houses where you get to meet people. But that involves a fair amount of decoding work, you know, because they're selling you something when they give you that promotional material.
Right.
And if you read between the lines, there is truth there, but you might miss it.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, my message to parents is to try to not worry about this one that much, right? A lot of it is out of your control. I think that's the ultimate frustration with picking a school and whatnot, is that we would love to be in control as overbearing parents, right, in 2021 and have a hand in determining our child's success, right? But you don't have the ability to guarantee success no matter what your kids do, right? And they do need to some degree to figure things out on their own. And most schools... are okay in Canada. We're living in a country where the education system is fairly equitable, right?
Yeah.
And then my main thing is that those two aspects that are the most important, which is the friendships and the teachers, is something that no matter how much you keep trying to prod and try to find an answer, You cannot control the two main variables of what determines your child's school experience, right? Like, you could be in a great school and they just happen to get targeted by the two class bullies, right? And that can ruin them for a year, 2 years, 3 years, right? You could be in a school that's kind of struggling, but, you know, they meet a peer group, a couple friends who are very highly motivated, and then your kid is with them, and then things are good. Like, it is too hard to predict as a parent. This is a thing that's really beyond what most parents can control. And I feel like we spend so much time trying to control it, trying to feel like we're optimizing it. But really, it's in some ways much ado about nothing. That's my personal take on it.
That's a pretty good way to leave it, that, you know, the thing you can't control is all these aspects of the school. The thing you can control is the kid.
Yeah, and how much sleep they're getting at night.
You've got to work on that. You make sure that kid's doing their homework. You stay on top of that aspect of the things, and you'll be better off than saying, I picked a good school. They'll take care of it all. And so here we are at the end of the podcast. I'm going to go check my school's ratings, check the ratings of the areas, take my kids out of public school. They'll probably end up in private school. Meanwhile, Dr. Shu has realized he's taking his kids out of private school. He's just going to just trust the school system, and he's putting his kids in public school and just focus on the things he can control at home. One more thing that comes to mind when I think about that concept of choosing a school for the type of people that are there or the type of neighborhood that the school's in. It just reminded me when we were in Kingston. When we were in Kingston, were you part of that group of us in first year as medical students that agreed to be this program where we would go out to schools to do sex education?
No, I was not. I knew that program existed, but presumably you need to know about sex to go to such a program.
I forgot. It was by invitation only. Your invitation, it got lost in the mail, Dave. Well, so I remember we went to two schools. One school was right next to the university and was well known to be a more affluent school. Like, it was a more affluent part of town. It was more affluent kids who were going to that school. And then the other school that we went to, I won't call them out by name, I guess. I'll spare them that. But it was a school that was not in the affluent neighborhood and not known for attracting the wealthy. Right? People weren't going out of their way to buy a house next to that other school just to get the kids into it, let's say.
All right.
And the difference when we did the sex education out of there was night and day. Night and day.
So you got to elaborate. What do you mean?
So, well, for example, I remember that we had these small group discussions with the students and we're asking them, you know, okay, you know, if anybody's comfortable, does anyone want to share whether they're sexually active or not? And then at the less affluent school, all these hands go up. And, you know, one girl's like, yes, yes, I've been pregnant. And you're like, oh, my gosh, it's a 14-year-old.
Oh, man.
Compared to the other school where when we are giving them a box to answer questions, to ask questions, and you can ask any question you want anonymously. The questions that we're getting asked from that school are things like, you know, is it normal for hair to start to grow in this area? And you're like, these are high school students.
Wait a minute. So you're telling me that the affluent kids knew nothing about the real world?
I'm not sure if either of these two schools knew a lot about, actually had knowledge about sex. But one school had a lot more practical experience than the other school did. That was for sure.
On that note, parents, find the most affluent school in your neighborhood and run for it.
When you're looking at school facilities, ask if they have a condom dispenser at your school.
I actually don't even know how to respond to this story. I mean, all that stuff I said about like not worrying about school and like just try to chill out. Forget that. Pick the most affluent school you can. You'll be glad you did it. That's it for this week on Medical Dads. All right, folks. On that note, happy hunting.
Bye. See you next week.